From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Sea turtle nesting season has officially begun in Florida. There are already a handful of nests that have been spotted along the Gulf Coast, and now's the time for us to do our part. The suggestion to turn off lights on the beach becomes mandatory from now through October, as is the mandate to keep the beach clear of obstacles for nesting mothers. We'll talk with local turtle experts about the projections for this season and learn what's happening along Florida's coasts. Plus, further inland, a raging wildfire last month threatened a little-known wolf sanctuary in Naples. Dozens of wolves, wolf dogs, and other animals had to be evacuated. We'll talk with Shy Wolf Sanctuary's senior volunteer about the animals, which are back home now, and we'll find out about plans to find a new home for the sanctuary, which could double as a shelter for other animals forced from their homes by natural disaster. First, the news. Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. The fact that Shy Wolf Sanctuary exists may not have been known to most until last month's wildfire threatened the 60-some animals that call it home. Headlines and news reports followed as the wolves, wolf dogs, and other animals were evacuated and eventually returned to the sanctuary, making some people aware of its existence for the first time. Here to tell us a little bit more about Shy Wolf Sanctuary, how it came to be, and what it hopes to become is senior volunteer Jeremy Albrecht, who's been working there in his spare time for years. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are talking about Shy Wolf Sanctuary and the heroic volunteer efforts undertaken last month to evacuate the animals as wildfires threatened their home. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Jeremy, first, tell me about the Shy Wolf Sanctuary. What animals are there, and how big is it? And how did most of those animals get there?
Okay. Our sanctuary houses about around 60 animals at any given time. We've been around in some capacity for about 30 years, but we've been a 501c3 nonprofit for right around 17. The animals that we have vary all the time, but we specialize in canines, wolves, and wolf dogs mainly. We have had some of the smaller big cats over the years, as well as a host of smaller animals, everything from things like kinkajous and lemurs all the way to prairie dogs and chinchillas, things like that.
So it's pretty much a catch-all.
It's a catch-all, yeah. Anything we can house, we'll give it a shot. Some of the bigger class one cats and things like that, we're a little small for that. We are on 2.5 acres, so we are in residential area, so we do have a lot of regulations we have to stick by.
I could see neighbors getting a little nervous about a tiger next door.
Yeah, anybody should be nervous about a tiger next door, yeah.
So the Shy Wolf Sanctuary's website tells the individual animals' stories one by one. We have a link to that on WGCUnews.org, so you can click on the Gulf Coast Live tab to find that website and then read all these different little stories. But is there a particular animal story that sticks out for you?
Yeah, this seems like a cop-out answer, but it really is the most recent one that came in. It's because, and I've been doing this for about 3.5 years, so really my experience is just kind of a drop in the bucket for this place overall. But in that time, I've seen a lot of animals come, and our most recent one was in the worst physical shape that I've seen. The emaciation and the mange and the parasites this animal was carrying were just terrible. This was an animal we got from a Miami shelter that had been recovered by somebody and turned into them. It's what we consider maybe a mid to low content wolf dog. This animal has blossomed in amazing ways in just the few weeks it's been with us. It was missing most of its hair when it got to us. Now it's got this beautiful black coat. It does, like a lot of our animals, sort of bear the scars of its experiences, so it reacts different to different people. But we've got a lot of volunteers that have just fallen in love with her, or him, I'm sorry. If you visit, his name is Hopa, and you'll hear his whole story. But a lot of the stories are very similar. We get animals that are abandoned, and they come from the shelter, or they come from the owner. We have some individual stories that are a little unique, but I guess my other favorite would be our dog Treasure, who is a wolf dog and basically showed up in somebody's junkyard-style backyard. So when you're there and you see him, he's this big, magnificent animal, and it's kind of hard to imagine walking out one day and finding him outside playing with your pet dog. But he's an amazing animal as well.
So now you're talking – the animals that come to you are animals that have either been abandoned or abused or left in some kind of a situation that's negative. And some of them come to you from shelters. Do shelters not want to keep wolf dogs or wolf-mixed canines?
Right. Shelters, and it's probably different for all the different states, but shelters generally will not adopt out an animal that's perceived to have any kind of exotic animal mixed in, whether that be coyote or fox or wolf. The liability is just too high. We understand that most of the area shelters know us and will give us a shot if they suspect an animal under their care is a wolf dog, or in some cases potentially even a full-blooded wolf. So we've got that network working for us. But if they make it to the shelter, their odds are getting real low. All of our animals, with a very few exceptions, are failed pets. They're animals that somebody purchased with the idea of having a kind of a cool exotic animal under their care, and quickly found that they were over their head. That includes the panther that we're currently housing. He was a pet as well.
A pet panther.
A pet panther, yep.
Somebody thought that was a good idea.
It's not as uncommon as you think, but yeah, no, somebody thought that was a good idea at some point.
How do people achieve these kinds of animals? There aren't breeding programs to sell off baby pet panthers or baby wolves, are there?
There actually is. It depends on the laws in your states, and there's lots of states that have outlawed wolves and wolf dogs, Georgia being the closest one to us. Florida in general just regulates the animals. You need a certain permit, or sometimes that's an easy permit to get, sometimes it's a very difficult permit to get. There's people out there that are breeding them. I mean, there's situations where animals, you know, some of the smaller animals may even come from the wild. It's hard to track those things back to where they are. These are all failed pets, with the very exception of one of our animals that was born wild. Those are usually mother abandonments, and those would be considered failed rehabs, in the sense that when you're a wildlife rehabber, the idea is to rehab an animal and then reintroduce it into the wild.
Yeah. Does that ever happen with your sanctuary? Are you ever able to do that?
We don't do that.
No.
That's the animals that end up coming to us are the animals that could be rehabbed, generally speaking, health-wise, mm-hmm. but could not be reintroduced into the wild for whatever reason. And there's very specific ways you need to handle an animal that you plan on putting back in the wild, because there's a lot of liability involved in that. The animals that couldn't go back to the wild, every once in a while will end up with us. And the examples we have right now are our raccoons, our coyotes, and our gopher tortoises. But all the other animals we have there have come to us because of they've been failed pet attempts. Yep.
Is there a reason that they're failed pets? Is it different raising a dog that has a little bit of wolf in them?
It absolutely is. There's always going to be exceptions. I tell everybody on my visits that come and visit the sanctuary, I tell them that there's always going to be exceptions. There's always going to be animals that break the mold per se. But generally speaking, a wolf or an animal that has some wolf in it is going to basically do everything you don't want your dog to do. They're escape artists. They're amazing diggers. They're amazing climbers. Physically, they're extremely strong. They're great jumpers. In my opinion, the greatest risks to a wolf dog owner are that many of them maintain the prey response that you may not see in your dog. And so you are potentially putting the small animals, things like small dogs and cats and other pets, wild animals around you in danger. And in this day and age where, you know, people are trying to limit their liability, it's a big liability to have under your care and under your responsibility. Another thing that I think a lot of people don't think about is that your dog at home, it has – it's preconditioned. It's a domestic animal. It wants to make you happy, right? So when it looks at your shoe, it wants to chew it, right? But it doesn't, because last time it chewed your shoe a couple of years ago, you got really mad and disappointed in it. It doesn't want to disappoint you. That's how it gets treats, is being good, right? So that also gives you the option to be able to punish an animal, you know, show them that whatever they did was bad, and that's how they learn. But a domestic dog wants to learn that. If you treat a wolf dog that way, that has more wolfy-like behaviors than dog behaviors, they don't see it as something that they did wrong. You walk into your home and your dog has gone through your trash, it knows it's in trouble, right? It's usually stuck in the corner, won't make eye contact. With a wolf, if you take that animal and you stick his nose in it, he just sees that as abuse. So you're actually dissolving your relationship with the animal. Soon you could actually have an animal in your home that's not only scared of you, but may defend itself against you.
It may turn on you.
Yeah.
It's kind of like – I mean, I'm not a cat owner because mm-hmm. I'm allergic to them, but it's kind of like cats. You know, you can't really train them that well.
Well, I mean, cats
but
also –
a lot stronger and a lot more able to dig.
The digging is – just mind-blowing. I mean, we've seen situations where we actually have a picture on our Facebook site right now of one of our volunteers. I think she stands maybe 5'3" or something. She's standing in a hole that was made overnight that comes up her neckline. Yeah, so the amount of dirt that they can move in your yard is not the kind of thing you kick over and pat down with your foot. You're on the way to buy a load of dirt and sod to fix that. They're very destructive.
So if these wolves that are there, if this kind of a wolf, part wolf dog, can they make it on their own out there if they do escape?
No. Generally, what happens when an animal escapes like that, it's going to be tough to recover, some more than others, but they're generally going to want to stay at liberty, right? Usually, or a lot of times, the Florida Wildlife Commission or something, or or the police will have to get involved. A lot of times you can get them back yourself, but they will not they'll survive the way, say, like an urban raccoon would survive. They're going to be eating out of trash cans and mm-hmm. going and surviving that way. But they won't pick up and enter the ecosystem and fill a void in the ecosystem or anything like that. Absolutely not.
Do we even really have wolves down here?
We do not have wolves in Florida. There were wolves in Florida maybe 200 years ago. It was a species of red wolf called the Florida wolf. But we have coyotes here. That's coyotes right. And foxes are the canines that live here in Florida.
So the coyotes, foxes, and wolves and wolf dogs that you've encountered there at the sanctuary, do they all kind of have similar behaviors that kind of are like one step away from wild?
Well,
I don't want to generalize everybody, but
no,
I mean
it's a good question. I mean they're all different, and they've all been molded by what they are, but also what they've experienced. So we've got animals that are really tough nuts to crack that we have to work on and work on and work on in order to get them to begin socializing. We push for socialization with people. These are captive bred animals. We do it in a safe way. But generally speaking, when an animal comes in, we rate it as a high level animal, and we let our high level volunteers start seeing what this animal's behaviors are. Sometimes we've got a couple animals there that are just seem like the behavior is just a hair off being your dog at home. And then the next one will be extremely fearful. They don't want to you said something like turn on you or whatever. They don't want to have an altercation, but they will defend themselves. They're not going to go out of their way, even our most difficult ones to work with. But the way I like to say it is we've got a level system 1 through 5, and the higher the level, the more difficult the animal is to handle safely. We don't have any vicious animals at the sanctuary. That's just not their nature.
Well, it's interesting the way that the sanctuary is even called Shy Wolf Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. I mean, do they kind of act shy and timid to avoid kind of confrontations?
They absolutely will go way out of their way to stay out of confrontation. So, I mean, if you think about it, these animals are all about self-preservation, right? And getting in fights is not a good way to self-preserve. It's a way to get injured. And these animals in our sanctuary are behaving and operating as if they're wild because they are exotic animals. So they are going to do everything they can to stay out of a physical altercation, but they are fantastic actors and actresses. They will put on quite a show to get you to turn the other cheek and walk away.
Oh, they'll act super vicious to just get you walk away.
They'll tell you exactly how they feel. If you're taking something away that they don't want you to take, they'll tell you exactly how they feel. But if in a situation where we have to push that situation, normally they'll back down from things like that because that's just not them. It's a common misconception that wolves are fighters and scrappers and they war with other packs and everything. It's just not true.
Do you feel like they're kind of misunderstood?
They are the most misunderstood. I mean, there's a lot of animals that carry stigmas that they have not earned, but wolves are right up there. I mean, kids are taught from a very young age in half of our nursery rhymes and
the big
children's
bad wolf,
tales,
right?
Exactly, that the wolf is the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, anybody who's listening to this right now, if you come out to the sanctuary, you will be disarmed quickly at the way they receive you. Mm-hmm. Some are curious, some are cautiously curious, but they're nothing like what you'd expect to see.
Yeah. We are talking about the Shy Wolf Sanctuary in Naples. If you have a question, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had the wildfire, and that got kind of close for comfort there. And what was interesting is you had to evacuate a number of these animals, and you talk about animals that have an unearned bad reputation, mm-hmm. one of the volunteer organizations that came to help was the pit bull people, folks. They came over to help you out. So it's kind of an interesting camaraderie. Tell me a little bit about that evacuation process and about the people that came to help.
Well, that was something that none of us had ever experienced before. In 30 years, we had never evacuated animals from the sanctuary. We rode it out through Wilma and through Charlie and we'd never had a fire close. There'd been a couple, I think, that were on our radar, but we'd never had a fire that was close. So it was, there was a lot of unknowns and a lot of things we learned. Also, in my opinion, we were much better prepared than you would think out of somebody who had never had to do it before. But the amazing part of it was just the amount of support we got, and not just from wonderful other organizations like the Pit Bull Rescue and some of the places that our animals ended up spending a couple nights, but just the general public, people that are, members of our Facebook or have come and visited, were calling us and texting us and saying they have these resources or maybe they can just come and lend a hand. I had a couple neighbors just walk down to see how we were doing. I mean, it was really very, very heartwarming. We did evacuate all the animals, including the animals that live in the house, the cats. We didn't have a single soul left on that property when we left. And by Friday night, our animals were spread over three different counties. We had a lot of animals that went home with people, some of our easier animals to maintain. And then we had support from the Southwest Florida Reptile Rescue, who took our tortoises. Grizzly experience out in, and I'm not sure if it crosses over to Immokalee or if it's East Naples. They housed about 14-15 of our animals, I think. I was out there. It was an interesting experience to be unloading these animals with a few big grizzly bears looking at us.
Just watching.
Yeah, wondering what we were doing.
Okay, there's a grizzly bear place. Who knew this? I mean,
well, that's hopefully everybody knows now, because this guy was very. His name is Dexter. He was extremely integral in our evacuation. He gave us a lot of space to put our animals, and not only just space, secure space we could use
away from the grizzlies. I would hope.
Yeah, no, they weren't in with the grizzlies. They were adjacent, but not in with the grizzlies.
Grizzly adjacent housing.
Right.
That's nice.
That's
pleasant.
We also had the Kawaiichobe Animal Preserve took a bunch of our animals. We had a kennel, and I really regret not remembering her kennel name, but her name is Michelle. She's in Naples. She had given us four of her indoor climate-controlled enclosures for four of our animals. We sent some up to a guy who used to have tigers and still has his enclosures. That was in Punta Gorda, so they had just all over the place. But by that night, there was not a single animal on that property, and I couldn't be prouder of our volunteers or the community for helping us.
Did the fire actually impact the cages or anything? Or
a lot of people have asked me how close was the fire. I couldn't tell you. We never saw flames. But when the wind would blow right, we would get ash, we would get smoke. We were under mandatory evacuation, so we had police at the end of our street making sure that everybody that came in would belong there. So how far geographically the fire was away, I'm not really sure.
But you ended up not having any damage, right?
We did not have any damage.
We
didn't lose anything. Nope.
And all the animals were able to get out and get back, even though some didn't really want to go. I saw there was a video. One really had to be convinced.
They want to stick to the status quo because that's what,
they've done.
Yeah, so right? That's what they're doing right now. We got the last three back on Saturday, which went so much better than we expected. It was a nice surprise because that was our big cat and two of our or one of our more challenging wolf dogs. And part of this is sedation. That's part of getting an animal from point A to point B. But sedation is hard on the body. It's hard on the system. We want to avoid it if we can. And it also costs money. It also it costs funds that people donated to us. So with that in mind, the fact that we were able to get those last three home without having to sedate or anything safely home and complete the project and have everybody back and be whole again was a great feeling.
So Shy Wolf Sanctuary started in 1989. It's sort of like in the backyard of the founders, Nancy and Kent Smith. It's a big backyard because it's a 2.5-acre piece of property. But it's got to take some serious engineering feats to create space for so many animals. And the current population is just over 60 residents. What are the plans for expansion?
Well, our biggest initiative right now, our biggest long-term initiative, I should say, is to move facilities. We have been in, as you said, Kent and Nancy Smith's backyard for a long time, too long at this point. On top of that, being in a residential area, it gives you many, many challenges. One of them is that we rely on things like this, opportunities like this to get our name out there. You said it at the beginning. A lot of people don't know about us. You can be an animal lover in Naples for years and years and never know we even exist. That's because we can't advertise. I can't put I can't put pamphlets in hotel lobbies. I can't even put a sign out to say where to go. Mm-hmm. If you look for our address online, you won't find it because we can't show that we're open to the public because we're not. If we were able to move to a facility that was a commercial area and develop it from the ground up, one of the things you'll find right away when you come to our facility is it becomes very obvious that it was built a little at a time. And we rescue another animal, need another enclosure. And mm-hmm. So, you know, getting a wheelbarrow from one side to the other is not an easy task. We'd be able to design this new place with those kind of things in mind. And it would open up a world. I can't believe the things that this organization has accomplished just in somebody's backyard. And it is a 2.5 acre property, but the backyard is only about half of that, right? So the rest is driveway.
And I imagine the neighbors might have something to say if you start putting everything in the front yard.
Yeah, probably.
Do they ever do the howling thing?
Yes, they do.
Do they do it every day?
They do it every day, but it is they don't howl at the moon. That's a misconception as well. They're not howling all night long. We get, I would say, maybe 5 or 6 howlings during the day. It just takes one animal or person to make a howling noise, and they'll all go.
What about a fire truck going by?
I've never really heard them key off that. I have a wolf dog at home. That's the only thing she howls at, so that's a good question. But the when people ask me that question about, you know, how disruptive is the noise, it lasts, if you look at a howling as 2 or 3 minutes, you're looking at maybe 10 minutes a day as far as
I think it'd be kind of cool personally, but I mean, that's taste, right?
Anyone who comes to the sanctuary that lives close says that. Now, they're probably biased because they're there, but I think it's a lot better than, you know, a couple of yappy dogs can make a lot more noise than our animals make.
Or so, a rooster at 5 a.m.
We have – it's funny you say that.
You have that?
We don't have that, but some of our neighbors do. So we do get that somewhere.
Oh, great. Yeah? Wake them up and start the howling. Just get the day started early. So you guys go out and do educational experiences too, and sometimes mm-hmm. you take a wolf with you and you do this at schools?
We don't take a wolf, but okay. We do take a wolf dog.
A wolf dog. I'm sorry.
We'll do just about anything that makes sense for that has some kind of an outreach. It doesn't matter if it benefits us. If it benefits the animals and the species and the people we're educating, then we'll do it. That's things like schools or we've gone to a lot of retirement places. We'll do a lot of we can even do things like private events and stuff. But anything that gives us a chance to raise awareness, because that's one of our missions.
So when you have all these animals and they keep coming, how do they go out? Do you adopt out animals ever?
On occasion. Most of them we would not consider adoptable. We just can't – with some of the higher level animals, we just can't imagine that we could get them to a more suitable place than we've already got them.
But some of them are able to?
Every once in a while, and it's almost always to a volunteer. Somebody that we know and trust. We have a very stringent number of constraints that you have to be able to provide. You basically have to provide a equal or better quality of life than we can, and that's not an easy task. So a large outdoor enclosure, all the raw meat that they need.
Those and fencing things. Probably wouldn't and cut it.
It's basically 9-gauge. Chain link fencing, but it can't just be a fence. It has to have dig wire. It has to go down into the ground. And normally it has to have a top on it too, because they'll go right up a 12-foot fence and go over it if you give them a chance.
They're crafty little guys. And how much food do they go through?
We feed our animals 4 times a week. We feed them Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday.
Are we doing like dog chow here? Or
no.
Meat?
It's 100% raw diet. It's going to be – I'd estimate it to be maybe 75% chicken and then maybe 25% beef and pork. We get most of our beef and pork donated to us. We purchase our chicken. It depends on the animal, but I'm going to estimate some of our bigger animals probably get somewhere in the 5 to 7 pounds of meat per feeding, something like that. So it adds up. In nature, this animal would eat 25 pounds in one sitting and then not eat for a couple of weeks. So it's you know, we can't really recreate that, but we you know, that's kind of what we've got in mind. That's the
as much as you can.
For it, yep.
Yeah. So real quick before we go, tell me a little bit about volunteering there. Are you open to new volunteers, and how do you vet volunteers to make sure that they're good to go and the training that they have?
Absolutely. Actually, we get a lot of wonderful volunteers right here from FGCU. We're affiliated with FGCU, so we get a lot of people coming over here and doing their requirements, and it's just wonderful when they decide to stick around after they've completed their hours. Volunteering is open to anybody. We don't have any requirements other than age. They have to be 7 years old or older. To 7 to 17 is essentially somebody who can volunteer with a chaperone.
So a junior volunteer.
Right. And then 18 and after, we don't require any experience. Really what I always say is we require two things. We require common sense and we require desire. And if you have those two things, you will be successful. But what I tell everybody who's talking about volunteering for us is just that it's a great place to volunteer because we don't hold you away from the animals. If you're there for the animals, you're going to get a chance to make some relationships with them, and that's what I would expect most of them to be there for.
Sounds very hands-on. But you
it
do
is.
The training, correct? You train people
absolutely.
Like how to behave, right?
Yep. And we have – yeah, absolutely. We have a level system so that people don't get into situations that they're not qualified to handle.
Yeah, all of a sudden they're with the alpha wolf. And
exactly.
Didn't
yeah.
need to be. All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in. Jeremy Albrecht, senior volunteer with Shy Wolf Sanctuary. It was so great to talk to you and learn more about what happens at the sanctuary and what your future plans are. You can find links to Shy Wolf Sanctuary at WGCUnews.org for more information if you're interested. Our show today was produced by Matt Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan, with extra help today from John Davis. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.